So the first reading and the gospel have a lot in common. The first reading has these words, "Woe to the complacent." And then a little bit later it says, "They are not made ill by the collapse of Joseph." Who is Joseph? Why should we be made ill by his collapse? Well, Joseph, when he's talking about Joseph, he means the tribe of Joseph. And the context is, this is right before the Babylonian exile. The northern kingdom has not yet been overrun, but they become pagan. They become just a hodgepodge, and they're a mess. And, you know, by DNA, they're still Jewish, but not by anything else. And the prophet is saying, woe to the complacent. He's talking about the leaders in Israel. He says, and he's reading this whole litany, you're sitting here comfortable, you're eating and drinking and rich, and you don't even care about the fact that, you're not living your faith. You are a materialist, and you don't even care about the fact that your brothers in the next kingdom have lost their faith, and things are collapsing around you, and none of it matters to you because you're comfortable. And that's pretty much what God is saying to in this first reading. The reading of the rich man and Lazarus is kind of similar. You have the rich man, we don't know his name, but, and that's actually on purpose, because later on you're going to see that Jesus, who is the rich man in this parable? The rich man was actually the scribes and Pharisees that Jesus was talking to. And he says, woe to you, okay? And he gives this example. You've got the rich man who is comfortable, he's eating, he's drinking, he's well-to-do, seems like everything is going great, and at his gate is this beggar who is starving. And the rich man, it never says that the rich man set his dogs loose on the guy or that he did anything bad to him. It simply shows that he doesn't care. Why? Because he's comfortable. He has become complacent. And this is the common theme. The danger that we have of becoming complacent. What are the things that can make us complacent? Well, one is simple laziness. When complacency is when we don't have the energy, we don't care enough to get up and do something. We don't, like, if we see a problem and it doesn't move us, we don't love, ultimately. We can become complacent just by being flat out lazy. You know what? When we're lazy, it's just like, well, basically, I'm just comfortable being here, okay? It's not worth the energy. And that's a form of selfishness because we're focused on our own comfort. We can become complacent through money, through pleasure, through food, as this guy, food that represents this guy's wealth. He's got all kinds of, sumptuous food, and he's in comfortable clothing and everything. All these things can make us complacent. As long as I am comfortable, I am okay. And again, what is at the root of that? These are all very subtle forms, and sometimes not so subtle forms, of selfishness. And when we are selfish, we don't have the energy, or the illumination, or the inspiration, or anything, to see the needs of others. This is what both of the readings are getting at. Now, in the gospel in particular, we see something interesting. The rich man and Lazarus both die. And the rich man is being tormented in flames. And you say, why is he being tormented in flames if he didn't do anything wrong to Lazarus? Well, he's being tormented in flames because, again, he didn't do anything bad to him, but he also didn't do anything good for him. That should scare us, by the way. How many of us can so easily get wrapped up in our own little world and we think, I'm not hurting anybody, therefore I'm fine. I don't wish anybody harm, I'm not hurting anybody, I'm just wrapped up in my own world, and therefore I'm more or less doing okay. And what Jesus is saying is wrong. If you're not hurting anybody, well, congratulations, okay? That's not a very high standard. Okay, I must be a good person because I haven't shot anybody. Okay, well, that's nice that you haven't shot anybody. Congratulations. Big pat on the back. Okay? That doesn't mean that you love. That doesn't mean that you love. So some of this, what I'm about to say is my own interpretation, okay? There's symbolism here. I think the gospel gives us a little bit of latitude to interpret things. It says that the rich man is suffering in flames. What are the flames? Well, we're going to get there. I think we could ask ourselves the question, where is the rich man? The ordinary interpretation is the rich man is in hell, right? And it says later on, there's this gulf that cannot be crossed between the rich man and Abraham in heaven. Uncrossable gulf. Therefore, the logic, and he's suffering. The logical conclusion would be he's in hell. And that may be true. That may be what Jesus was getting at. I actually heard from Scott Hahn once. Scott Hahn is this famous Bible scholar. And this makes a certain amount of sense. He says he actually thinks he's in purgatory. Why? Because the rich man says, Father Abraham, first of all, Father Abraham, help me, I'm suffering. Okay, anybody in hell might do as much because you're suffering. Like anything, one drop of water, anything. You can imagine, he doesn't ask for a glass of water. He asks for a fingertip, a drop. You're like, this guy is that hard up that even one drop of water, could you imagine how hard the situation is? That anything is better than what I'm suffering. But the interesting thing is this. The man who is suffering in the flames cares about his brothers. He recognizes, he says, go to my brothers and warn them. A person in hell would not worry about that. A person in hell would want his brothers to come join him. The person in hell is going to be angry at himself, angry at the world, angry at his brothers. How come it's your fault I'm here, etc., etc., etc. A person in hell has absolutely no love and no concern for anybody but himself. This guy is showing precisely what he didn't show when he was alive. Concern for somebody that is not himself. I think that's a good argument for the fact that where is he? He's in purgatory being purified. And that purification is teaching him how to love. He's still got a long ways to go, but there's a process going on there. So what are the flames? And this is really where things are going to get weird. The flames are God's love. Well, how can God's love be so painful? How can God's love hurt? Well, God's love does not hurt the parts of us that are the way they should be. Remember when St. Paul in one of his letters says, you know, at the end of our lives is that each person, their life is, we're building the temple. He said each person is going to be judged on how you build. Some people are going to build with stone. Some people are going to build with wood or straw. And it's all going to be tested by fire, he says. Well, the stone in the fire, really, the stone is perfectly fine. Gold, metal, whatever, all that stuff, you stick in the fire, it's a big deal. But the wood, the straw, you know, if you build a house out of newspaper, good luck. That's what this guy is going through. The reason he's in agony is all of the selfishness, all of the things that he is attached to still are being burned away. He's being purified, and purification always hurts. And the reality is, every one of us has sins that we are attached to in this life. And if we are not purified of them in this life, then we will, if we're lucky, be purified in the next life. If we're not purified in the next life, it means you're in hell and you're stuck with them. And the flames don't purify, they just torture. Okay? That's at least my interpretation. The flames are God's love that burns away his selfishness. So why is it then that the guy would say, that Abraham would tell him, look, there's a chasm between me and you, between people on my side and on your side, so the people on your side can't cross over to us and vice versa. Here's where Father Eric jumps in to the rescue. Probably heretical, but you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. I think it's like this. As long as, what is the difference between being in heaven and purgatory, the difference between being on this side or that side? The difference is the people on the purgatory side are still attached. They still have things they need to be purified of. Their love is imperfect. The people who are on God's side have been purified, therefore their love is able to flourish. Okay? As long as you are over on this side, you can't cross over. Once you have been purified, it's not like you cross. It's the fact that you have already become something different. Therefore, ipso facto, you're already on this side. I don't know if that made any sense to you, but anyway, in my twisted mind, that makes sense. So, it's not a matter of taking somebody who's already, who's still in this process of purification and dragging them into heaven, because they can't, they're not ready. But once they're ready, it's like they're no longer in this state of being. They've already transformed, and therefore they belong over here. So, they're crossing. Make more sense? Anyway, that's the Father Eric interpretation. You can take it or leave it. It's probably not going to matter in terms of your eternal salvation whether or not you believe what I said. Finally, the last thing that Jesus, that Abraham says, which is a little bit scary. The man is crying out, Abraham, you know, warn them. But, you know, and Abraham is like, no, they have Moses and the prophets. Yes, but if somebody were to come back from the dead, they would believe. And Abraham says something that seems like, well, that's very harsh. But even if somebody came back from the dead, they won't believe. When is Jesus saying this? Jesus is saying this very shortly. This is very shortly before he went to Jerusalem to be crucified. What happened right before Jesus went to Jerusalem to be crucified? He came to a town called Bethany. Why? A man named Lazarus, his friend, died. They sent to Jesus, said, please come cure him. And Jesus waited and let him die. And right before Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, what's he do? He raises Lazarus from the dead. What was the scribes and Pharisees' reaction to that? It wasn't, hey, Jesus must be the real Messiah, we should probably get on his bandwagon. It was, no. Not only are we going to try to kill Jesus, we're going to kill Lazarus again. That was their conclusion. Even if somebody came back from the dead, somebody who, by the way, just happens to be named Lazarus, even if somebody came back from the dead, it didn't matter. They were not converted. They remained unchanged. Why? They were complacent because they were in their comfort zone. Their comfort zone was prestige, power, respectability, a certain way of thinking that they're not willing to change. Okay? It is ultimately the complacency that God is talking about then is the complacency of a person who says, I'm not going to change. I'm good the way that I am, and therefore I don't need anybody else, and I'm not, even if God himself comes to me and tells me to change, I'm going to refuse. That's a very dangerous place to be. And the problem is, in little ways, you and I can fall into that. So, let's kind of summarize today's gospel. We are not called for complacency. We are called for holiness. And the one thing that prevents us from being holy is that attachment to ourself, attachment to our attachments, which is the opposite of loving. Attachments mean selfishness, and selfishness means I don't love, and not loving means I cannot be with God. The Father and Son and Holy Spirit.